We are joining John Latimer. You're live from the duck blind this morning. Is that correct, John?
Yes, Ed Anderson and I are live from as near to the duck blind as we chose to get today. It's a cool morning on Boy Bay, and there's lots of ice out there, not enough to skate on, but enough to make it treacherous for boating, and we just we chose discretion over valor. And I'm not sure that that would have been the case 30 years ago, but today it makes good sense. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning.
thanks for having us at your duck camp. This is a lovely spot. We were out last night. It was it's quite fascinating. Can you describe the area a little bit?
Yeah, so we're on Boy Bay, which is in the northeast corner of Leech Lake, kind of right where the Boy River empties into Leech Lake. The cabin that we're in is sitting on a few acre island of high ground surrounded by kind of a wet meadow, sedge grass. And the bay itself is pretty shallow, lots of rice, big view. This morning we're sitting in the cabin looking out the picture window watching for ducks because it's a little cold. We had to break ice last weekend, half a mile just to get to the river, which was open. But the ice has been coming in a little bit more and more every day. Last night got pretty cold, and we're seeing more ice than we are water. So we thought, with the paucity of ducks that we've been seeing lately, that maybe we'd be better off sitting here drinking coffee and watching. If the ducks come in, maybe we'll go out and try to get out. But so far, we're not seeing anything.
It's always a gamble. And last night when we were out and coming back across the bay, strong winds, big waves, it you look at that water and you realize that it is not malevolent, but not welcoming. It's, you know, if something went wrong, if you got your motor clogged with weeds and you had to do something out there where you ended up maybe tipping the boat, it wouldn't be an easy survival.
No, even if you're right next to shore, it's cold.
Yeah.
But it's also a fun time of year to be out because there's things that you don't see the rest of the year. The last week we've been seeing lots and lots of swans, both tundra swans and trumpeter swans. There were several hundred of them up in the north end of the bay last week. A few now still around. You know, we're seeing them still regularly, but not in as great a numbers. But last week we had many, many, many times every morning, flocks of 2 to 20 swans coming right overhead, sometimes 20, 30 feet overhead or less, talking the whole way, trying to go up the river and sit down and go back to the big flock. And I was telling John, I had one flock that came over. It was a family group of trumpeter swans there were three younger ones that were a little darker and two bright white swans flew right overhead, went upriver 150, 200 yards, and the three juveniles sat down. The two adults kept talking and talking and talking and circling and circling and circling like they were trying to tell the kids, come on, we're not stopping here, let's go. But the kids finally won and the adults sat down. It was kind of funny.
We've had a beautiful view here. The sedge meadow that we're on is uniformly sort of brown, khaki, tan, maybe a touch of yellow here and there. And then the willows that are growing up in the middle of it look quite white. And not white. There are some white ones. The stems are quite red. And so the overall view is really spectacular. And that's really one of the nicest things about getting out on a duck blind. Duck hunting, it takes you to parts of the country that you wouldn't otherwise normally visit. I mean, duck hunters know this, but for those of you who aren't duck hunters, the idea of being out in some of these marshy, swampy places amongst the phragmites, the common reeds, the cattails, just these sedges of many, many different kinds, it's really quite spectacular. And then sort of amongst these things, there's this one plant, and many of you are probably familiar with this plant that grows in the summertime called dock, and it gets to be a kind of a really, really dark brown, and it's always seen along the edges of roads. Well, there's a great water dock that grows out here. It grows many places in northern Minnesota, but this time of year, it's bright red, and it stands up like these bright red flags that are really, really quite beautiful. On the way over here, we witnessed quite a few autumn willows, and Ed, maybe you can describe them for people.
Yeah, well, I'd have been asking John. I wasn't sure actually what they were, because the last week or two, especially running up the river, when you go up the Boy River, it's sedge meadow, low grass, some cattails. That goes probably half a mile on one side to the wood's edge and farther than that on the other side. And periodically, you'd see a bush that was just looked bright white. None of them were close enough to the river where I could really get to them to see what they were. And I was asking John on the way out as we drove by one. I said, "What is that? I've been, either I haven't noticed it in the past, or they're a lot more noticeable this year." So John filled me in.
They're really quite spectacular right now, and these are willows. They are always growing in very moist areas. It may not be water there, but there is water there periodically throughout the year. The willows themselves flower in the summer, in the midsummer, and so you don't see them flowering because of all the leaves on all of the other plants around them. But then in the fall, when the leaves come off of the willows, you see what are left behind, which are the catkins, the female flowers. And they're an inch or two long and fluffy white. They've got these cottony seeds attached to them that'll eventually blow about. And what you see now are those white cottony seeds. And the interesting thing about these willows is that they don't colonize the way many species of willow do. So you don't get great clumps of them. You get an individual plant here, and then over a little ways there'll be another individual plant, and then somewhere else another one. And in some places on the way over here, there were hundreds in a big, broad, swampy area. But most times you're driving along and you'll see one or two. I was in Bemidji last Thursday, and coming home from Bemidji on Highway 2, there were many along the highway, and one spectacular one just outside of Bemidji going east on Highway 2. But I'm sure that many of you listeners have probably seen these autumn willows out there. It's really quite spectacular this time of year, and one of the really interesting things to look at this time of year. I wanted to make mention of Crooked Lake, the lake that I live on, because Crooked Lake froze this year on the 3rd of November. And I thought, well, that's early. That's really early. So I went to my records, and I found that Crooked Lake typically, or average freeze-up date, is the 14th of November. The earliest it ever froze up was November 2nd in 1984, and again in 1991 in October of 2002, it froze up on the 24th, but promptly opened up again a day or two later, and then froze for good in 2002 on the 3rd. So this isn't the earliest, but it's, the second earliest date I've ever had for Crooked Lake freezing up. The latest dates that Crooked Lake has ever frozen up, 1998, it froze up on December 3rd. And in 2009, it froze up on December 4th. And if you look at the decades, so if I go from 90 to 99, the average freeze-up date for that period was the 16th. Going from 2000 to 2009, the average freeze-up date was the 17th. So that decade would have been slightly warmer than the previous decade. But then going from 2010 to 2019, the average freeze-up date is the 13th, so that it has gotten colder in the last 10 years than the previous two decades. So it was interesting to see. And for those of you that know me, you can probably expect me to be walking around with pants that'll be wet to the knees for the next couple of weeks while I find out what lakes are frozen and which ones aren't. I'm also checking, you know, looking around and seeing that the eastern cottonwoods and the weeping willows are still holding their leaves. So if you have a large tree near you that's got kind of a mixture of yellow and green leaves on it, it's probably an eastern cottonwood. They're phenologically not in rhythm with the other aspens in this area because they are imported. The cottonwood doesn't normally grow this far north. So the cottonwoods are still holding their leaves, so are the weeping willows. But that's about it. There's this off-brand aspen called a Lombardy poplar, which was planted for decorative reasons and always reminded me of a cigar. It doesn't branch out much. The branches sort of sweep up and they're very kind of compact. And you might see one or two of those as you travel too, and they would still have their leaves on them. Outstanding birds this week. Juncos are still around. Bob and Cheryl Tkarchuk up in Cherry told me that the evening grosbeaks were back last Wednesday. Sean Conrad and I saw some robins on Sunday night. Sean also saw a golden eagle on Highway 7 up near 51. And Sean is an expert birder. And if he tells me he saw a golden eagle, I believe him. I get a lot of reports of golden eagles because juvenile bald eagles look a lot like golden eagles, and juveniles tend to be sometimes even larger than their parents. And so you can be easily fooled, but you're dealing with about 1 in 100. So of 100 dark eagles you see, one might be a golden eagle and the others are probably juvenile bald eagles. There are still some American tree sparrows around. This fall was interesting in that I have not seen any fox sparrows, and I haven't heard of any reports of fox sparrows, and they're typically a bird that comes through spring and fall. We see them migrating through the area spring and fall, but no other times of the year. This year I did not see any. Northern holly, still covered in berries. I suspect that if you are going out deer hunting this weekend, you're probably going to come across some bushes with bright red berries on them. And if you look at the stem of that bush and it's very dark, it's probably northern holly. Northern holly is also known as black alder, and the black refers to the dark bark on it. So watch for those. I was out kicking around and I noticed that the princess pine, the lycopodium, has its sporophytes on the top, the bright yellow combs that produce the spores that will create more princess pine. And those are, if you give them a snap right now, you'll see little powdery spores fly out of them. And when my son was a young boy, I went out with him and in the evening with a lighter, and we snapped the tops of those things and held the lighter underneath, and that's very flammable. It was a flash powder for early photography, and it produced quite a few giggles between the two of us. So if you've got young kids and you want to impress, go out and find some princess pine and take a lighter along, and you'll have a pretty exciting evening. Don't get too close. You might, at one point I snapped one and there was such a cloud of spores that came out that when it ignited, it made a ball of fire about, I'd say the size of a volleyball. And if my face had been any closer, I might have had a shorter beard. we're having a lot of fun. And Ed, you got any final thoughts?
Oh, just that we have to go out and try to find some princess pine this afternoon to stay warm.
All right, Holly. Thanks for having us on. That's our Phenology Show, and next week I'll be back in the studio.